presented by DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
So the Florida Gators have some big news here over the last couple of days, adding a quarterback, Malik Zaire, from Notre Dame. And if you watched SEC Country Live, we talked about this a lot yesterday. Really, if you've been anywhere where SEC fans congregate, there's also been a lot of talk about Malik Zaire coming to the Florida Gators as well. And listen, here on Dog Nation Daily, we obviously don't like anything that could potentially be good news for Florida. But admittedly, this probably is good news for Florida. Admittedly, this probably is an upgrade over what the Gators had at the quarterback position. And I mentioned SEC Country Live a moment ago when Mike Johnson, my co-host, yesterday in the midst of the conversation, he did kind of lay out the fact that with Zaire with the Gators are probably a better football team. Here's how he said it.
I think it makes them a score per game better. I think Jim McElwain and Doug Nussmeier could kind of open up things. I think that obviously we look at their offensive line and think they're improving. We like some of the guys they have out wide. The biggest question mark now with this football team to me is going to be how's the defense going to respond to losing some of the talent they did last year. But to me, Malik Zaire kind of plugs right in. I know there's still going to be Florida fans that point at Felipe Franks. I'm sure Jim McElwain will say all the right things leading up to fall camp and through fall camp, but they wouldn't have had Malik Zaire on campus if they all believed in Felipe Franks. So I think he plugs right in as a starter.
Love the way that Mike Johnson said that there, even though I don't like that news necessarily. His description is very similar to what I've said in the past. Florida probably finds an extra touchdown a game now. And an extra touchdown per game does probably put you in a position to win some more games than you otherwise would be able to win. And as Mike said, there'll be a pocket of people in Gator Nation who sort of push back on the, well, let's not give up on Felipe Franks so quickly. Felipe Franks was himself a former U.S. Army All-American. Maybe he's still got something to bring to the table. But as Georgia fans in our comment section have said now for a while, Florida has told you everything it needs to tell you about Felipe Franks, the guy that was going to be the starting quarterback, by the fact that they chased down Malik Zaire as hard as they did. You don't go after Zaire unless you think he's a better player. And so from that standpoint, I think Mike's probably right. I think that Malik Zaire probably does step in if – even if McElwain doesn't name him as the starter right away, he'll step in as QB1 at Florida pretty much the moment that he arrives there on campus. And Mike Johnson, my co-host, the former Alabama All-American, a guy that knows football really well, went into some detail about exactly what it is about Zaire that makes him a better quarterback, not just from what Florida currently has on the roster, but maybe what Florida's had on the roster in quite some time. Here's Mike again.
Listen, go back and watch any of Zaire's film. Watch him move around the pocket. Feel the pocket presence. Feel where the rush is coming from. And then go back and ask those Florida players how excited they are. I guarantee you that offensive line is in there right now celebrating. Having a guy that can kind of move around that pocket when it seemingly, the last few years, they've been kind of protecting a statue. I mean, Will Greer was the closest thing they had to a guy that can probably pick up a first down with his legs. So kind of plug in Zaire right in, you know, as soon as he gets there. Letting him feel the way it is around the pocket. Understanding where these blitzes and where these rushes are coming from. This guy is heading into his fifth year in college. He knows his way around the college football program better than anybody they have on campus right now.
So listen, we got some Florida fans in our comment section on SEC Country Live yesterday saying that they thought, this is Florida fans saying this, so you can, you know, judge your opinion if you want to, but you know, they've got some emotion invested in what they're saying. They thought that Zaire was the best quarterback Florida's had in Gainesville since Tim Tebow was on campus. That's obviously kind of a big, bold statement, but that's what a lot of Florida fans were saying in the comment section on SEC Country Live yesterday. So the point of playing those two clips is to establish something that I think is just objectively true. Florida with another quarterback of Zaire's caliber, a guy that has some experience with Notre Dame, that makes Florida a better team. But what is the impact that could have on Florida this season? And that's where things kind of get interesting for Georgia. Because all of a sudden, I think the stakes in the SEC East race have kind of been changed a little bit. Let's say that Mike Johnson is right. And let's say that Florida finds an additional score per game that it did not get last year, or it would not get if Felipe Franks was at quarterback instead of Malik Zaire. Well, all of a sudden, Florida's probably a better team. And a team that you were told was kind of potentially a 7-5 team, at least based on the opinions that I've shared and what some of the Las Vegas odds makers have talked about. All of a sudden, maybe that record's a little different for Florida. All of a sudden, maybe they find not just an extra score per game, but an additional win per two or two during the season. Here's Mike Johnson on that one more time.
Yeah, the schedule doesn't look quite as daunting as it probably did before Malik Zaire decides to transfer to Florida and before these rules get changed. I mean, we've talked about Florida's schedule over and over again. They open with Michigan. They're going to end with Florida State. That is two incredibly tough non-conference games. And you add in the fact that LSU is their cross-division game every year. They're going to have a couple tough games on the schedule. Malik Zaire, to me, plugging him in kind of gives you that big league caliber at quarterback. I mean, we haven't seen him a ton, and he hasn't got a ton of snaps in Notre Dame, but you just feel a little bit better with him in that position. His ability to throw downfield, make plays happen with his legs. I think they have to feel better going into this first game against Michigan.
So all that for me, though, is a setup for this. Yes, you'll say that Florida's better with Malik Zaire. Offense probably scores more points. An offense that scores more points leads to a team that wins more games. That's probably true, and the SEC's probably just got tougher for Georgia to win. But the $64,000 question from the standpoint of a Georgia fan, though, is should the Dogs still be considered the favorite in the SEC East? Well, once again, I asked Mike on SEC Country Live yesterday, and he gave an answer that I think Georgia fans are going to like, and I happen to think it's also true.
Georgia's still your favorite in the East? Zaire showing up at Florida?
They are still my favorite in the East, and I think it's going to come down to probably this game. I think Jacob Eason has to outplay Malik Zaire, whoever is the starting quarterback for Florida. But the defensive losses, and we're even going to include Jeff Collins on that list because they did lose him as a coordinator, to me, still kind of are going to tell the tale this season about the Florida Gators. I think they have to move on from that and kind of get over that defensive hump.
So listen, I think there are three points that you have to deal with about this entire discussion. How does Georgia compare to a Florida team that just got Malik Zaire at a quarterback? Well, first of all, the SEC East just became harder to win. I think Florida does have a better record now. You know, before Zaire showed up in Gainesville, before he announced that he was going to show up in Gainesville, I had Florida being about a 7-5 team. I had Tennessee being about a 7-5 team, which means that Georgia could have gone 9-3 and sort of coasted its way into the SEC East title. And listen, for a Georgia team that hasn't been in that game since 2012, you'll take a division title however you can get it. But there is a nature of this that's just become a little more fun. And maybe the SEC East a little more interesting, and Georgia's potential accomplishment a little more significant if all of a sudden you have to beat a better team to get there if you're Georgia. I also think what Mike brings up is really interesting and something we've also talked about here on Dog Nation Daily a lot. The fact that Jacob Eason... Really, there's already a ton of pressure on Eason as it is, but even more pressure on his shoulders now, given that he'll be facing potentially a better quarterback in that showdown in Jacksonville that we count down to each and every day on Dog Nation Daily. I love the way that Mike Johnson just said that there. Eason's got to outplay Malik Zaire in that game. And by the way, that would have been true if Eason was going up against Felipe Franks. It'll be true against Tennessee when he's facing also an inexperienced quarterback. Eason, in these sort of gunslinger moments, has got to step up and outplay the quarterback on the other side of the field, and having to do so against a guy that got some experience at Notre Dame just sort of raises the stake for Jacob Eason there a little bit in that discussion. But the overall, though, most important takeaway, though, here, when you compare Georgia and Florida for this upcoming season and who the SEC East favorite's supposed to be, and one of the reasons why I like Georgia so much more than I like Florida in terms of being able to win this division, is because while Eason's role is significant, that is not the only tale that's going to tell who ultimately wins this division. You have to compare the full roster on both sides of the ball for both teams. And when you get to the defensive side of the ball, despite the fact that Florida has been very good on that side of the ball since Jim McElwain became head coach, the changes, the loss of personnel, the loss of defensive coordinator Jeff Collins moving on, as Mike Johns just alluded to, and I think that gives Georgia a true opportunity to take a big-time advantage of Florida's losses on defense, and for Georgia to put together a unit much better than the one the Gators are going to put together this season. You see, the bottom line for me on this entire discussion is I agree with Mike. I don't think that Georgia's status as SEC's favorite has changed at all, even with Florida adding Malik Zaire. I think the Dogs should still be the SEC's favorite. And what I've really been pushing Georgia fans to do for this entire offseason is to embrace those expectations. You know, treat this as not just something that Georgia should do in 2017, but something that Georgia should be in the conversation to do each and every year. After all, you know, that is why Georgia transitioned from Mark Richt to Kirby Smart, because a lot of people around the Georgia program just wanted to set a higher standard for what the definition of achievement truly was for Georgia. Well, 2017's not too early to start achieving some of that. Yeah, Kirby will coach this season with a little bit of pressure. Jacob Eason, the quarterback, will play with a little bit of pressure, but you wouldn't expect anything less than that when it comes to the SEC. Florida just got better, but it shouldn't have gotten better than Georgia. Dogs should still be on top in the SEC East, and I can't wait till the fall to find out if that actually ends up being true. My name's Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Great to have you with us. If you listen on the radio at noon every day on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, you can watch us on video, of course, 10 a.m. each and every morning on Facebook Live on the Dog Nation Facebook page. We appreciate you checking us out. Of course, we love your questions and comments. We'll look forward to hearing some of those throughout our broadcast today as well. Also in podcast form, whether it be on iTunes, SoundCloud, we post the show at dognation.com each and every day, pretty much wherever podcasts can be found. You can find Dog Nation Daily. Also, we're excited about a big countdown that we have going on, getting ready for the Dog Nation Invasion to South Bend coming up in September. Of course, we've been selling tickets to our Dog Nation Invasion bus, but more than that right now, R.S. Andrews stepping up to the plate to provide a Dog Nation Invasion giveaway to South Bend, which includes more than just a spot on the Dog Nation Invasion bus. You can also enter to win for your chance at airfare, lodging, tickets to the big game in September, all courtesy of R.S. Andrews. Hope you'll check that out at dognation.com. If you sign up for our last giveaway, you still need to sign up again for this one. It's a fresh new pot of entries, so go ahead and get your entry in there at dognation.com. You can get your chance at winning our Dog Nation Invasion giveaway to South Bend this September, courtesy of R.S. Andrews. Hope you'll check out R.S. Andrews online at rsandrews.com. They're the home of the $99 AC tune-up. I trust these guys. I know you will as well, to get that air conditioning tuned up this summer so it does not go out on you on the hottest day of the summer. Check them out online, rsandrews.com. Let me also count down our Gator Hater countdown here. We are now just 143 days away from Georgia, Florida, the world's largest outdoor cocktail party in Jacksonville this October. Make sure you check out shopdognation.com. You can get your Dog Nation Daily Gator Hater t-shirt there at shopdognation.com. All the sizes in stock for you. Check it out online. We'll give you free shipping at shopdognation.com. Good to have you with us here on Dog Nation Daily. Hope you enjoy Jeff Sintel right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
And, of course, it is great to have Jeff Sintel here on Dog Nation Daily, especially on a day like this when there's so much to get into after a very busy recruiting weekend for UGA, not just in terms of the two commitments the Dogs got, but in terms of other prospects they evaluated and certainly twists and turns that are maybe yet to come based on the events that unfolded during Kirby Smart's camp. So, Jeff, let me first of all say good morning. It's great to have you on the program here. And let me start with Warren Erickson, if you don't mind, the offensive lineman from North Gwinnett added into the fold for the 2018 class here. He's obviously an interior offensive lineman and a pretty impressive prospect in his own right. But does Erickson showing up as a part of Georgia's 2018 class do anything to impact the future status of a couple other guys that Georgia's also really interested in and fans are certainly interested in, Jamari Sawyer and Trey Hill?
Yeah, Brandon, this is just good news for Georgia. There's no dark tentacles or this means some bad things with Hill or Sawyer or anything like that. I think it's just a momentum play for Georgia, how – you know, Erickson actually becomes Georgia's highest-rated commitment, and I think he's definitely going to be a guard or a center. I mean, but, you know, the way centers are found now is you bring in a bunch of guards, and then maybe your most mentally adept, versatile type player that can, you know, put the ball on the ground and get it to a quarterback. That guy becomes your center. But I think Georgia's class. I think Jamari Sawyer going to take a long while, at least until Army All-American game season, January, February, that sort of thing. And then Trey Hill might be a little bit earlier than that, maybe towards the end of his season. I don't think Warren Erickson has anything more to do with just Georgia adding a pretty good player for the trenches and on the offensive line and just getting some momentum for the 2018 class. I know folks watch that. I know some people even on your great programmer, probably calling Code Reds right now about how little amount of recruits that Georgia had for 2018, especially compared to 2017. Thing to remember there, though, this is just, I wrote yesterday, this is just a weird place in the universe to me, and it's very, very funny and odd how Georgia could be just below Vanderbilt in the SEC recruiting rankings, but two slots ahead of Alabama, and this is in June. I don't think that's ever happened. I don't think it will ever happen again where Georgia is ahead of Alabama but trails Vanderbilt in the SEC recruiting rankings when it's 85 and 90 degrees outside. That is an anomaly for sure.
Well, Jeff, I'll be completely honest with you. I think you're bringing up a really good point, but I also want to be very honest about my point of view here as well. While I do think there is reason for Georgia fans to be concerned about the small number of commitments, here's the other thing, and it's not super easy to talk about this because on this show I am never going to disparage any individual recruit because who's to say that any player doesn't show up on campus at any school and become an all-time great. You know, I'm not going to doubt a kid's, you know, will to win and will to compete. I'm going to let them speak for themselves with their own play. But sort of collectively, when you look at what Georgia's got going on in the recruiting right now, it is sort of easy to surmise that maybe Georgia has somewhat lowered its standard for the kind of player that it's willing to accept compared to what we think of as the typical Georgia standard, and certainly the standard that Kirby Smart set for himself in 2017 and really 2016 as well. Do you think that statement is fair?
I can see the viewpoint, Brandon, but I just don't think the baseline you're using for comparison really meets the criteria. If you ask me, I think a guy like in the 2017 class, a guy like Justin Schaefer, a guy like Walter Grant, those guys were big dog players and some of the better guys Georgia signed this year. They just weren't ratings-wise on the scale. You know, I think Warren Erickson is a guy that out of North Gwinnett, very soft-spoken guy, a very tough-minded, hard-nosed kid. I think Warren Erickson is a guy that just helps Georgia up front. And you got to remember, Georgia up front is going to need a couple more pieces for the 2017-2018 class now because of what happened with Mr. Demery. So now they're looking for an extra lineman there. And I just think I think it actually just helps Georgia recruiting in state a bit with Warren Erickson. You get another one of Georgia's top 30 players or so. But then the other thing is, I think you got to remember how these guys are rated. I mean, you got to trust the staff and their evaluations. You know, I see Chris Smith all the time. I think he just picked up his fourth star. I think Chris Smith is a lot better than that. You know, Jake Kermada is only a two-star prospect. So I think that, you know, the ratings will never give any sort of the proper boost or love to a kicker or a punter. And now you've got Warren Erickson, who becomes Georgia's highest-rated commitment. And I think it's just basically a momentum play there is where Georgia needs to show they're getting a lot of guys. And, you know, the interesting thing there is I'm not going to speak out of both sides of my mouth here. I'm going to try and keep it grounded. And I think the best example to me is the safety that just committed as well. That would be Rashad Wild Goose Jr. Now, while he is definitely belonging on the all-name team, I guess I would love to hear what Scott Howard would say if Mr. Wild Goose ever picks off a pass. But I've talked to a lot of football people wanting to know what they think to kind of confirm what my eyes see about these two prospects. And a lot of smart football people I talk to about Wild Goose, they tell me that although his size fits the cornerback position, he's more of a safety prospect right now, more of a zone corner, more of a nickel corner. If he's that, and most people I talk to, I've got a sampling of about four or five opinions to base it on right now. They tell me that Wild Goose is probably he's rated right where he needs to be as a two-star prospect. So, in that aspect, you know, this is a situation where the staff just feels he is a better fit than even the ratings people, the evaluation people, and now some a lot of the good football people that I trust to give me a really honest, confidential read on a player. You know, Wild Goose is probably a two-star talent that's going to Georgia. And, you know, lots of people will – I've heard some fans tell me that Georgia's recruiting class right now, and I think probably, Brandon, that's where some of the angst you're feeling right now about this is Georgia's 2018 recruiting class is starting to shape up like what Tennessee signs every year, and you thought that Kirby Smart was going to go after a higher grade of player. And I can see why you're thinking that, Brandon, but I would just say right now, given where Georgia is at in the college football universe, it's just going to take a little bit longer for some of those bigger names to come on board.
You're a student of Georgia football history. We said on the show yesterday that the only name that I can think of cooler than Rashad Wild Goose may be Wycliffe Lovelace, if you're kind of a longtime Georgia fan. Maybe that name rings a bell. That's about the only name for me cooler than Rashad Wild Goose in terms of just images that it kind of conjures up.
Oh, man, I got a couple, Brandon. I got Hiawatha Berry, man.
Hiawatha Berry is a good one.
I got
proud of Winder Barrow High School. Is that where Hiawatha was from?
I think so. He needs to be off of reservation or something like that. But I like him. I like Andre Pulpwood Smith. I do like Wycliffe Lovelace. I like Buzzy, Super Frog, Rosenberg as well. I mean, there's a lot of names.
If you've got nicknames, if they count, then you got to include like Eddie Meat Cleaver Weaver in a conversation like that. But that's only if nicknames can count.
I actually like Dale Carver a lot, just because he was the guy that carved up offensive linemen and sliced into the backfield a lot. That guy was really good. Georgia's always had their definitely a lot of their all name team guys, but you know. I get your point, Brandon. Wild Goose is definitely up there in terms of people are going to have a lot of fun with that one.
All right, so enough fun for the moment. I got to bring it back to doom and gloom here. I did not love Channing Tindall's quotes to you at DogNation.com. Now, I don't have a problem with Tindall for saying them. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is he seemed to express in his quotes that he just wasn't getting enough attention from Georgia to really establish the kind of relationship that's required to move them ahead of a school like South Carolina, which probably does lead for this really good prospect here. So has Georgia just offered too many scholarships to too many players to give the players that could truly be difference makers the kind of attention they really need?
Brandon, I think what you're thinking there, it's kind of twofold. I think with Kendall, to me, this is clearly a case of, okay, the coaches are spending and prioritizing their time to give love in a different direction. It seems to me like the narrative on Kendall kind of changed course maybe about 4 to 6 weeks ago, where Georgia started looking at other guys. I mean, there's inside linebackers like, a guy, Andrew Johnson, who just camped out of Tift County, who just camped at Georgia over the weekend. He's a name that's really skyrocketed of late over the last 4 weeks. He camped at Alabama over the weekend as well, also looked very good. You know, I think the thing that should bother the Georgia fan is not that they're losing the face-off with Tindall to South Carolina, even though that Tindall is a, basically hails from this Richland County area, which is basically Columbia. His hometown is the University of South Carolina. You know, not even the fact that he grew up in a house divided household where he was the Georgia fan in the household, and then maybe there's a slight lean to South Carolina. All that feels natural. To me, the clear indicator that Georgia has their eyes on another guy is that Auburn has now slipped in to become the number two between Georgia and South Carolina, where Georgia falls to three. That's a clear indication to me that the Georgia Bulldogs are just not shopping down the Channing Tindall aisle right now, and they're looking in another direction.
Yeah, no, I think that's really interesting. Another guy I want to talk about for a moment, and it seems like I loved your comparison yesterday at DogNation.com when you kind of slipped this in at the end of one of your sort of an afternoon intel. That's always a nice thing for us here at DogNation.com, but you kind of slipped in a comparison with a three-star running back, Master Teague, one of those guys that seems to be climbing up recruiting boards here for the 2018 class. You kind of compared him potentially to a Nick Chubb in terms of what he brings to the table. And I know that seems like a pretty aggressive comparison to some people, but, Jeff, I will admit that I've been really impressed over the last few weeks just how universal the praise is for Teague among recruiting reporters such as yourself who are evaluating him at these various prospect camps that he shows up at. This is a guy who's small but strong, certainly lightning quick, fast. Boy, he seems to be a pretty interesting prospect, and it's easy to understand why all of a sudden he's getting so much attention.
Yeah, I mean, I tell you what, Brandon, if I was going to basically, you go to which and you order a sandwich and you can check off everything that you're looking for in terms of a running back, I think Master WT the third has that. I think, first of all, he is a person of high character. His faith is very important to me. He wears the number 30 is important to him. He wears the number 33 as an expression of his Christian faith. His father is a psychologist and holds his doctorate. Right away, that's good starting material. He's 5'11". He's 212. He runs a 4.3. He has a 40-inch vertical. He has a broad jump of over 10 feet. He can power clean about 350 pounds. He can bench press about 330 pounds. To me, that's everything you're looking for in a running back. You watch his film, and he has explosive plays. He ran for over 2,000 yards on a team playing in one of Tennessee's highest classifications. He had over 2,000 yards. He had, I think, 14 touchdowns during the playoffs. He had over 8 yards a carry. He was never carrying the ball. He carried the ball an average of 22 times per game to rack up those 2,000 yards. He missed 3 games last year, only played in 11 games. To me, this is everything you want for in a workhorse, a warhorse, And the only thing that causes people to kind of scratch their heads is they hear the term three-star attached to his name. That's nothing to do with Master Teague. That's on the services that are rating these players. And it's on them to get out and see these guys. I'm going to applaud 24/7 Sports because I think their ratings, which are always of the highest caliber to me, 24/7 Sports has him as the nation's number 9 running back. And I think that's in the zip code of where Master Teague belongs. All I know, Brandon, is I've been doing this for about 15 years. I can't think of 10 backs that I've covered in recruiting or seen that have all the measurables right there that I just rattled off there for Master Teague. If you're looking at what a college running back would want to do heading into the NFL Combine, if a college running back could put up all those sorts of numbers heading into the NFL Combine, and remember, that 4.31 he ran at Bama was a laser time. A college running back would want to train for 4 months to get ready for the Combine and do everything right now that Master Teague is doing as an athlete. To me, I think, you know, everybody cringes and chews their fingernails about Zamir White and his latest moves. I think Master Teague is not only the perfect, it's not a Batman and Robin thing with Georgia's running back recruiting for 2018, with Zeus and Master Teague. To me, this is kind of more of a Superman, Batman, Iron Man, Captain America type picture where you're looking at. These are two big-time running backs that Georgia's after. And you got to give, you know, a really, really strong sense of approval to what Dale McGee's doing there, because he's found this guy and targeted this guy for the last several months when now maybe Ohio State and even Alabama are taking hard looks at him. And Master Teague, he's already down to Auburn, Tennessee, and Georgia. So, again, that guy, the personality, the way he's wired, and then throw the Chubb name around recklessly. Georgia's own coaches have compared him to Chubb because of his physical acumen, the way he works in the weight room, and also just his soft-spoken, very inner quality, inner strength type nature. Georgia's coaches have noticed that as well. And I didn't say he's another Nick Chubb or he's the next Nick Chubb because it's very reckless to do so. I just said he looks like the 2018 model of the back Georgia found in Cedartown about 4 years ago.
All right, Jeff, plenty more we could talk about. We'll do that in the days ahead. KJ Henry visiting UGA. You've been writing about that. And an interesting update as well on two potential big-time wide receiver targets. You've had some great stuff on that at DogNation.com. Also, I know Kyrus Jackson, Marcus Azar, two names that a lot of Georgia fans are really interested in. We'll do that on an upcoming episode of Dog Nation Daily. For now, though, thanks so much for your time today, and we'll look forward to reading more from you throughout the week and then catching up with you again real soon here on Dog Nation Daily.
All right, man.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Always good stuff there with Jeff Sintel. Glad to have him with us here on Dog Nation Daily. And glad to have now Marlowe's with us for the Dog Nation Invasion to South Bend coming up in September. You know, I've got a work function I got to go to on Friday. Got to leave campus here. And anytime that you're leaving to kind of go out to a meeting somewhere off-site, you're always thinking about, where am I going to get to go for lunch? Well, we've already been kind of scheming a plan here to get over to Marlowe's for lunch on Friday. Looking forward to that. Whether it be chef-inspired food, maybe I can talk one of my colleagues into sneaking a little cocktail on a Friday afternoon. It's all there for you, Marlowe's. We love them. We're glad to have them with us on the Dog Nation Invasion to South Bend. Hope you'll check them out online at marlowestavern.com. All right, a couple SEC stories I want to get to here, and also want to remind you to check us out on SEC Country Live today, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the SEC Country Facebook page. Thought that Tom Fornelli, CBS Sports, had an interesting piece on Friday, taking a look at some of the best over-under bets as based on what Bovada had set the over-under totals out. Of course, we like this kind of stuff. Anything that helps us predict what might happen in the upcoming season, we're always really interested in that, and we were interested in what Fornelli had to say about the Bovada stuff from his piece at CBS Sports on Friday, including making a suggestion that Georgia could be 7-5 this season, liking the underplay for Georgia. Now, before we jump too hard on Fornelli for this, he did make it very clear that he wasn't picking Georgia to go 7-5. He just thought there was some value in betting the under on Georgia in comparison to, obviously, what there might be in terms of either a no play or betting the over. And listen, the one thing you cannot deny is Georgia went 7-5 last season. So saying that it could go 7-5 this season is not necessarily a stretch of the imagination. And really, in some respects, this might actually be a welcome sign for Georgia fans who got maybe a little tired of hearing all the people that had just assumed that Georgia's going to be way better this season. All the issues from last season are going to be quickly corrected. Maybe some Georgia fans might actually like knowing that there's at least one doubter out there to prove wrong during the season. Maybe one aspect of extra motivation there. But I do think Fornelli's wrong here. I think Georgia fans ought to think he's wrong, too. I said this to start the show. Georgia fans ought to embrace the status here as SEC's favorite. Should not be afraid of Florida, should not be afraid of Tennessee, and should scoff at the notion that 7-5 is a reasonable outcome for Georgia's regular season here this year. I understand the point that Fornelli was trying to make, and I don't fault him for attempting to make it. I just happen not to agree with it. Something else that he said in his piece, though, is that he likes Tennessee to go over its 7.5 total, maybe winning 8 games or more this upcoming season, which, you know, I'm always interested in the kind of thoughts we maybe don't give a lot of consideration to. And, you know, it's funny, on this show, we'll do a lot of comparisons between Georgia and Florida, and we really just don't give much consideration to Tennessee whatsoever, because we assume that a quarterback we don't know much about is not going to be better than what Tennessee had last year with Joshua Dobbs. We assume that on defense, Jonathan Congbo is not going to step in as a really solid replacement for Derek Barnett, who I think even Georgia fans would admit was an outstanding defensive player for the Vols a season ago, which is to say nothing of Cam Sutton and Jalen Reeves-Maben and Alvin Kamara and a lot of the other talent that Tennessee lost. We just assume that those big names won't be capably replaced. I guess it is worth at least giving some consideration that maybe Fornelli's right in saying, hey, maybe the Vols are going to be better than a lot of people realize. Maybe Tennessee can win more games this season than most people would expect. I happen to think that probably won't be true, but it is interesting to hear a little bit of talk starting to emerge with the possibility of maybe Tennessee being a little bit of a surprise dark horse. I'm just not enough of a believer in Butch Jones to think of that as a possibility, and don't really like the talent situation there in Knoxville enough, but I do want to at least point out when other people kind of argue a point that's different than the one we've made here. Thought that Edward Ashoff had an interesting piece at ESPN.com looking at the SEC games this season with the highest stakes in this upcoming year, and the number 2 game on his list was Georgia-Florida, which is obviously important for us here on Dog Nation Daily because we continue to count down that game. I think that Ashoff is right, not just in terms of what it means for the Dogs and the Gators, but also in what it means for the rest of the SEC. Will this just be a sort of a consolation prize where the winner of this game kind of emerges as the team to get beaten up on by Alabama in the SEC championship? Or does this game prove that the SEC East as a division is sort of growing in comparison to the SEC West? And maybe there is a little more parity in the league this year than we've come to expect. I think that world's largest outdoor cocktail party could kind of point that out. Some of the other games that Ashoff mentions, also Tennessee-Florida, Alabama-Florida State, and the Iron Bowl. But it's Georgia-Florida that's crucial there, and it's one of the reasons why I'm glad to see ESPN writing about that. We'll make that your SEC through. All right, as we wrap up, I wanted to mention something that I'm sure many of you know that I noticed, the fact that Ric Flair's daughter is enrolling as a student at the University of Georgia. Obviously, we welcome her onto the Athens campus. I will say, though, there's an element of having Ric Flair around more that probably doesn't excite me now as much as it would have a few years ago. I mean, listen, there's nothing I would like more than the idea of Flair, you know, at Sanford Stadium with the microphone in his hand, doing a great wrestling-style promo to kind of fire up Georgia fans there in Sanford Stadium. That's obviously a win for everybody involved. The one thing, though, that makes that less cool now than it would have made it before is it just seems like Flair's kind of done this stuff a little too much lately. I mean, how many sports teams does he have expressed a fandom for? In the NFL alone, San Francisco, Carolina, Atlanta Falcons too? That's a little too much. The message got a little watered down. I'm not sure it works for Georgia, but glad to have his daughter on campus nonetheless. We'll see you tomorrow here on Dog Nation Daily.